Welcome to the America's Jobs Team podcast. Every week, we dive deep with economic development professionals on leadership and other issues challenging our industry. Our goal is to equip listeners with the knowledge to grow their impact and influence. You are America's Jobs Team, and when you get stronger, communities thrive. Today, Anne-Marie Henton joins Ron Kitchens. Anne-Marie is the Vice President of Business Development at Albuquerque Economic Development. Anne-Marie is a dynamic personality who has strengths in branding, marketing, public relations, and communications, and her quest for positivity is tangible in today's interview. Listen in now for more inspiration on how to involve your community in your talent retention and attraction strategies, and tack on some PR tips on honing in on your community's unique selling points. Let's listen in.
Welcome to the America's Jobs Team podcast. I'm Ron Kitchens, and we are so lucky today to have Anne-Marie Henton with us. Anne-Marie is a Vice President of Business Development and Marketing at the Albuquerque Economic Development Corporation. Did I get all that title right?
You did. Thank you very much.
That's awesome. So this is about leadership. You know, there's enough podcasts in the world or enough room for economic developers to brag about all their deals and about our spec buildings and about how our boards love us. But really what we need is stories of great leaders. And you're somebody who I admire. I not only know the guy who's been your boss for a while, Gary Tonjes, now retired, but have watched your leadership mature. And I'm in love with leaders who lead when they don't have authority and who lead up and create great capacity in communities. And you're one of those people that has done that and continues to do that. So how did you get into economic development? What was that moment that you went, oh, I'm an economic developer?
Well, you mentioned my boss, Gary Tonjes. I actually connected with AED because he needed a marketing director. So my background is all in PR and communications. I have my accreditation in PR. I've always been really fascinated with the behavioral and emotional components of getting people excited about a person, a place, a thing, whatever that might be. So he said, you know, I really need somebody who's great at that because we need to be able to tell Albuquerque's story. It's something that we really need to step up. And I said, you know, I have a business degree and I would consider myself a business nerd. I love to watch and see how companies build their strategies, but I don't truly have any experience in economic development. And he said, that's okay. I'll teach you how to do economic development. And that's exactly what he did. And within a couple of years, I was so excited by the client work, the business development piece of getting people to think of Albuquerque over any other place, the way that economic development organizations play such a massive role in a community. I mean, I've heard you say a million times, Ron, that, you know, a job changes someone's life forever. And to be able to get to play that role in this community is kind of what stoked the fire inside of me to be passionate about it.
It's awesome. And it's that, you know, people always apologize. Well, you know, I started down this path and I just ended up in economic development. But as I remind people, that's every career. You know, you can go get an accounting degree, but you never get a degree for the actual kinds of companies that you audit and that. And so this idea that, hey, I'm amazing at doing this, and that's a component of economic development. It just is a different name on the business card.
Right. But
I love Gary's, and Gary's a great mentor and has mentored a lot of us throughout the years. And I love that idea. We can teach you what you don't know, but you can't teach awesome.
Exactly. Thank you.
So 2020's been nuts. So not only have we dealt with COVID and dealt with this awakening on racial bias and dealt with, you know, the financial collapses or not collapses, depending on the sector, but in your shop, you know, there's a search for the new CEO. So changes everything. How have you had to not only deal with this constant, you know, the only thing constant is change, and still lead and do your job, you know, and Albuquerque is a place that still continues to win. So how has that informed your year?
I think like everyone else, you know, I've experienced this year, I would say from two perspectives. One, from a place of we had experienced some really great wins the last couple of years, and we're really starting to get some traction here around people knowing about Albuquerque. You know, we hear from clients and others where they just don't know that much about this community. They don't hear about it as often as they might some of the larger neighbors that we have around us in the Southwest. And so we've always kind of looked at that as the great challenge and excitement, the opportunity of getting people to go, wait, what's going on there that we don't know? And to get companies such as Netflix and Facebook and others to put their flag in the ground here has really kind of opened other companies' eyes to the magic that is New Mexico. And as a mid-sized city, you know, I've felt for a couple of years now that there was this gravitation happening toward mid-sized cities because you could have the kind of life that you wanted while still being able to access some pretty incredible job opportunities, whether that was locally, remotely, whatever. And so when COVID hit, the first thing that we did was recognize that we were probably going to experience a couple of different things here. One, the unfortunate experience of a lot of job loss, a lot of discomfort. Also, you know, those industries and organizations that are actually finding growth opportunities as a result of what they do and what people need in this pandemic situation. We knew that employers would be uncomfortable for a number of reasons, whether that was trying to transition their teams quickly and efficiently to a remote environment, whether it was understanding and keeping up with keeping their customers and their employees safe at all times. And so what we decided to do in the very beginning was look at this from the perspective of how are we taking care of the human beings in our community, and specifically our membership community. So we are funded primarily by local businesses. And so we made a decision as a team that we were going to pick up the phone, go totally old school, and call every single member on our list to ask them how they were doing, to see how they were, whether they needed help, whether they were scared, whether they were experiencing growth, whatever that might be. And that was the right call, in my opinion, because it reinforced to those people that we were thinking about them and watching and doing whatever we could to help them, that no matter what business you're in, at the end of the day, the people in our community are the people we do life with, and we care about them as people, and we care about where they land and where they end up. And then it also put our organization in a position to lead because people were listening. They felt comforted, they felt listened to, they felt like somebody was doing something for them. And so as a result, we had a really incredible engagement with our audience early on. And then over the course of the last couple months, it's been a great gut check for us in economic development also to look and reevaluate the role that we truly do play. I mean, we can sit here all day long and say to people calling us, you know, well, we really only do recruitment, or well, we only really help local companies expand. But the reality is our community sees us as leaders in this space. They see us as a go-to resource for connecting them to what they need in this moment. And also when it comes to our workforce, were we properly and appropriately representing our workforce to our clients the way that we should be at all times? Were we paying attention to the needs of communities of interest, whether that had to do with true interests in terms of quality of life, whether it had to do with ethnicity or underserved populations? How are we showing up for everybody to make sure that we were creating jobs for everybody here? And I think that we can always do better, and we are continuing to have those conversations with ourselves, with our partners, et cetera. And to me, it's made it more exciting. We're learning more about our community than we even knew before. We're having these experiences around true community stories that is exactly what makes this place worth selling in the first place. And so when I look forward to 2020, the rest of the year, 2021, whenever it is that we're able to kind of get back in person with each other and go back to experiencing those things, I think that we're going to have a richness here that we hadn't even experienced yet. So I'm hopeful for what the future will look like in terms of marketing our community to future employers.
It's an awesome response. And, you know, I want to go deeper on that. What do you think? Just spitballing, just out of the off the top of your head, What do you think, 2021, how do you know when you're back? You know, we can all talk about, well, we're good. We're going to get the virus vaccine. And so I live in Kalamazoo, Michigan, where Pfizer is going to make 6 million doses, you know, this year of that vaccine. So we're pretty pleased with that. But how do you know when your economy is going to feel truly engaged again? What's that benchmark?
I think the first thing, and this is such a fluffy answer, but it's real, is the feeling that you get in your community. You know, I've had conversations with a lot of economic developers who have felt this sense of disconnection, of people just doing whatever they can to survive versus thrive. I think when we get that feeling again, where you see people spitballing ideas and getting excited about new strategies and rolling out new strategies, that will be the tipping point for what comes after that. I think it's also been a little exciting to see how, us included, you know, everyone was forced into this virtual environment and most people weren't prepared for it. But as a result, what we've been able to learn about how we work together, what tools are actually really valuable to us, what will we keep, what are we looking forward to getting rid of outside of the virtual environment? I think once you organically see those things start happening, that will be the aha also. You know, I think of a local employer here who was very upset about having to transition to a remote workforce, and by Friday was doing his own video updates to his clients. You know, within a week, learned that entire new skill set and is delivering a value that he can continue doing long after we're back in person. I also think, you know, of course, anytime you see jobs being created, that unemployment number going down, new companies expanding, local companies expanding is what I really want to keep my pulse on, is, you know, who is feeling comfortable enough and really actively expanding their workforce. That's going to be a real signal. And then I also want to watch what's happening with higher education institutions. I think it's a really interesting time for them. I think we're going to see a lot of changes there as a result of this over the next couple of years. And how does that inform workforce development and job creation?
That's a great answer. And I happen to sit on the board of trustees of Western Michigan University. It has been one of those acceleration years. I've learned more about budgets of universities and programming and what exactly this, you know, behemoth, you know, in our case, employer of 8,000 people, what that business really looks like. And it is tough. The margins are slim and the expectations are high. So it is going to change. So you talked early, though, about, you know, your background was really communications, marketing, PR. And I think that is one of the things that economic developers may not do very well, is we tend to be people who don't tell the organization story very well. We leave community storytelling a lot of times to the Convention and Visitors Bureau, which has a very targeted storytelling in their mind. Or we let the media write the story. In your case, Breaking Bad could be the only thing that anybody knows about Albuquerque.
Which sometimes happens.
Yeah. You know, and so long as you can get them there to try to throw a pizza on the house or, you know, try to, you know, come see the spots and then show them that, wow, this really isn't a suburb of somewhere. This is really a vibrant, amazing city. What's that advice? What's that leadership you would give the listeners on how they can be better at storytelling and why they should be taking ownership of it?
At the end of the day, I mean, we can say whatever we want about how businesses make decisions or about how companies choose sites, but we've all probably experienced when there's data in front of you, what's the actual decision that gets made? And the reality is, for I don't know how many years, and I'm sure forever going forward, will be those forecasts don't ever include the component of human behavior and the psychology of where people want to be. So I always joke that economic development is a lot like online dating. So Albuquerque might not be the checklist for everybody, but for those people who are looking for the things that this community offers, it is incredible. And I would say that for anywhere. So if you are in a location where you're close to the ocean, that's a selling point. We're next to the mountains. That's a selling point. So really leaning into the things that are unique to your community, even if you're not the only community in the country that has it. Obviously, mountains are not unique to Albuquerque. But you know what is unique is I can take my mountain bike, put it in the back of my car, go to work downtown, be in the foothills 30 minutes after I'm off work and on a trail where I might see one or two people. You don't have that experience in Denver or some of these other mountain cities. And so think differently about what are those true pieces that are interesting about my community and listen to why and what people love about it. So for example, here about 2 years ago, me and two other local professionals did a bunch of focus groups with people who were not from Albuquerque. And the intention was to understand, what's it really like to come here? We were experiencing headlines around brain drain and people wanting to leave New Mexico to go to other places. But I wasn't experiencing that. I mean, I'm surrounded by a lot of people who are here because they want to be, not because they have to be, not because they came here for a killer job. They're doing whatever they can to be and stay in New Mexico. And as a result, we ended up launching a campaign, a local movement called Stop Bagging, Start Bragging. And that's because New Mexico has a little bit of a chip on its shoulder, kind of in the way where I can say something bad about my brother, but you can't, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And so
Albuquerque residents were saying all these terrible things, like, you know, if we were in the running for a big project, to be like, oh yeah, they're never going to come here, and here's why. And so we pushed back on that narrative to remind everybody that what you say online plays a role in whether we're able to attract companies, because companies are like people. They want to go where there's excitement. They want to go where their values and desires around life match up. And so if people never hear what those values are or what those attributes in our community are, why would we expect them to put their company here versus one of our surrounding areas? And so that took off like wildfire. And some of the fun that we're having around here is changing that narrative. So for example, something that has come up often here is, oh, it's the land of manana, because we have wide open spaces and beautiful sunsets and this amazing quality of life in terms of like a slowdown, that it's been thrown around as a term like, oh, New Mexico moves a little more slowly. Well, New Mexico, the land of manana literally means the land of tomorrow. So what's interesting to me, especially in now it opens sunsets and mountains, and all of a sudden that's incredibly attractive to people who have been cooped up in an apartment of 700 square feet for months on end, right? And so I also would tell people, your story might change depending on what happens. You know, if a change such as the pandemic all of a sudden creates this wanderlust in people to be in the Southwest, be where they have land, to go to a place where they can own a house with a huge backyard because it's affordable, all of a sudden our community is sitting in a different spot than we were when everybody was talking about wanting to go to Austin or New York or Chicago. And so think of your community the way you would think about your best friend or your spouse or your child. You know, what are those best attributes? Because guaranteed, if you go into every city, they're going to have those social issues that we all experience. And harping on those social issues at all times doesn't do anything to help you tell your story. And I'm in no way suggesting that you put your head in the sand and pretend that you don't have challenges. What I am suggesting is get excited about being a tourist in your own town, because it changes your experience with your city. It changes how you view local companies. It changes how you view the things that you drive by every day that you never take the time to get to know. And all of a sudden you fall in love with where you are instead of feeling frustrated by the things that might be lacking.
I think that's great. I think people forget that, but they want to apologize for the authenticity and they want to make excuses why they don't. Well, you know, we don't have a Costco, and whether that might be really important to somebody locally. And I can remember getting this unbelievable nasty letter because I wouldn't get a Jack in the Box to come to town. And I'm like, you're kidding. And this time I lived on the Gulf of Mexico in Corpus Christi. Are you kidding? We have the best seafood in the country. We eat outside all year round. It's this amazing place. But what success was to them was a Jack in the Box. And so we have to help people see sometimes that, you know, the Hatch chilies in New Mexico are pretty damn amazing.
Right.
And that's not something you apologize, it's something you celebrate.
Absolutely. And it's human nature for people to focus on what's not making them feel great. So the other thing is, don't you want to play a role in raising your community's self-esteem? It is so much fun right now for me to look around our community and see how excited people are and to be getting messages constantly from people asking, hey, how can I help? I want to participate in this campaign. And then it's also been kind of fun to be in rooms where people start complaining about something and they look at me and go, Anne-Marie, I'm not bagging on Albuquerque. I'm just saying, you know, and so it's getting people to think differently about how frequently we go with this negative headline narrative instead of making our own choices about what we love or don't love about our city. And it's normal not to love everything about your city. I'm pretty sure that we could be happy in any community in which we would find ourselves if you make the choice to look for what's cool and what's different and unique in that way.
I can tell you, after a four-day weekend like this past weekend, my wife has a whole list of things she doesn't love about me. Well, you know, exposure is going to create that. And so you mentors have played a lot of importance in my background. What role have mentors played in your life? And what responsibility do you feel then to pass that on?
Mentors have been invaluable to me my entire life, whether we're talking about, you know, my high school counselor as a freshman sat down with me and made sure that I took every single class that I needed to get into a particular college. Had I not done that, it wouldn't have been required in New Mexico and I wouldn't have gotten into the University of Arizona, where I ended up going to school, and I loved it there. And then when I was at U of A, I had incredible professors who, some of whom I'm still in contact with, where I've gotten an opportunity as an adult to participate in their research projects, to watch their own businesses grow, et cetera. And then moving into, you know, my own career, when I was early on, when I came back to Albuquerque, I was born and raised here, but I left for a while. And when I decided to come back here, I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. And it wasn't really what I had pictured. And so my dad called me one day and said, hey, you know, I really think you need to meet this woman. She's a firecracker in Albuquerque. She does PR and marketing. You've got to meet her. And I was thinking, yeah, okay, dad, you know. And I go to coffee with this woman. Her name was Jennifer Reardon. And she ended up being one of the most critical and important figures in my career the first 10 years that I was here in Albuquerque. Unfortunately, she passed away a couple years ago. But she wrote me a letter of recommendation for every job that I've had. She wrote me a letter of recommendation for every award that I've won. She's the one who called me and said, hey, Gary Tonjes needs a marketing director. You would be awesome at this job. I already called him for you. Hang up and call him right now. And so truly, as a door opener, when you have somebody who believes in you in that way, who sees your ability, especially as a young person, where you don't necessarily have any check marks on your resume that people think are that impressive yet, that is just, you can't buy that kind of help and support. Another thing that I did in my 20s that I'm really grateful that she suggested to me was I would watch and see who was consistently quoted in the newspaper, who was consistently winning awards around town. And I would call those people and ask them to go to lunch with me. And I would do nothing else other than ask them what their advice was for a young professional and to ask them what they were most proud of and then the worst thing they experienced as part of their careers. And what that did for me was build this confidence that, oh my gosh, these people that I hold in such high regard have made mistakes in their jobs, that they didn't have a linear path to where they are. And it opens your eyes to what is possible. And then also those lead to lifelong relationships in many cases, where then you have more mentors showing up for you, more people who you can pick up the phone and say, hey, you know, I've never done this before. Can you give me some advice? Or do you have a suggestion for where I should go to research? And that has paid me back in spades over the years. And when you ask me, you know, what is my responsibility? because of what I've seen it do for me, someone in addition who was accessed, who had a college degree, when I see what that did for me, I feel so responsible for turning around and doing that for other people, whether they're young professionals, whether it's women in particular, or in this case, in a lot of cases now, there's a lot of people, my senior, who have been uncomfortable with different generations in the workplace. And because that's a topic of, it's a speaking topic that I have developed an expertise for and that I speak nationally on, I've had the opportunity to mentor some of those people as to how to better build teams, to work with teams. And then as someone who has some season under my belt now in my career, I'm also finding that I'm learning a lot from people who are new to the workplace. I'm learning new technologies. I'm learning, you know, when you see young people, they're lacking that jadedness that kind of comes with being burned in age and experience. And they believe that anything's possible. And it reinvigorates me to get excited that just because you're at a certain point in your career or a certain age in your life doesn't mean that the door is closed for doing something new or doing something else. We can constantly be lifelong learners and evolve with each other. And mentorship does not have to take place in any kind of formal setting. I've never had a formal mentorship where I sat down with somebody, asked them to be my mentor. We meet once a month and go through structured kind of learning. It's always been this organic experience. And then when I started working at AED with Gary, I had the opportunity to kind of watch my boss and how he was so skilled in diplomacy and building and maintaining relationships. And I watched and I learned from him. And then I would try and do those things. And as a mentor in that space, he was willing to get out of the way to let me. He was willing to give me a platform to have a voice, to make a name for myself. And as a result, I was able to be more successful in my job because people would start listening when I had something to say. And that was 100% because he intentionally got out of the way to make that happen. And so I think
that's awesome. And, to reinforce, I'm a solid believer that every leader should have a mentor that's one generation older and one generation younger. And you're probably going to get better, more relevant advice from the generation younger. You're going to get advice how not to step in front of the train from the generation above you. And then you got to balance whether or not riding the rails is worth it. But if you're not getting people who are younger than you to call you out and keep you relevant, then that's where people get so old and so kind of disrelevant. And I hate to see that on people.
Right. Another thing about mentorship is it keeps you as a practitioner rising to the challenge. When I hear people say to me that they respect me, that they look up to me, that keeps me from being complacent. It keeps me from feeling sorry for myself if something isn't going well. It helps me remember that we can always pivot. And there's always something to try next. And I think that's something we don't talk about in mentorship enough either, is it makes you produce better work when you know people are watching and looking toward you to help them take the next step in their careers.
Well, I think you're dead on. You know, every leader at some point enters a point in their career that the only things that can bring them down are a moral failure or a financial failure. And so we all put together auditors to keep us from doing something dumb with money or something happens. We've got that system. But this idea of a moral failure, the only thing, there are lots of things, there's faith, but the thing I think a lot forget about is this expectation of who will I disappoint? And those are the people who are looking to you as a mentor. They're looking to you as that leader whose leadership they want to emulate. And by reminding yourself that it's not just the board or your family, it is those people who have put their hope and faith in you that you crush that spirit. And I talked to a lot of leaders, talked to one over the weekend, who had a moral failure. And it cost him his career and his family. And I said, you know, what's the lesson learned of that? And he said, if I'd have just reminded myself of the people that were really important to me, the people I worked with, the people, you know, who were in our company, the people who came to our, you know, and used our services. If I'd have just reminded myself of that, I don't think I would have done what I did. And I think that's that idea of mutual accountability that being a mentor and a mentee brings. Mm-hmm. So we have time for one more question, according to Faye. What's your favorite part of being an economic developer?
I think that I get to look around at the people that I love and do life with, and I get to hear their stories about the work that they're doing or the jobs that they're getting. And I can't tell you how often I get to sit there and just feel this enormous feeling of gratitude and excitement that our organization played a role in that somehow. And knowing that we are truly changing people's lives every day gets me so excited. And I do love the chase of getting a company to see why Albuquerque is better than another community, especially if in a certain situation we might be considered an underdog. I love that challenge of getting people to see what's possible. So that's what excites me the most about what we do. It is a huge responsibility. I think that I experience a healthy level of anxiety pretty frequently around the work that we do, but it's because it's such a responsibility, and that will always be important to me that I got to play a role in transforming a community.
Yeah, I'm the same way. You know, the idea that the greatest force for change is a job, and it changes yesterday and today, and it changes tomorrow. And there are very few people who have the honor and privilege to ever get to be part of the continuum of changing somebody's lives. Teachers, pastors, you know, it's kind of an economic developers that, you know, we get to be. I remember early in my career, we did a deal, brought a company into town, and it was a time where health insurance was really hard to come by. And everybody, and it happened to be a company that hired almost exclusively women, and everybody who worked there was able to provide health insurance for their families. And having women come up to me and tell me this story about, for the first time ever, their 10-year-old had gone to a doctor. First time ever their husband had been to a dentist. First time ever that they had had, you know, women's health screening. And you just go, man, it's not about the jobs. It's not about the car you bought. That really is life altering.
Right.
And it's just not many people who get to participate in that. So we're blessed to be able to do that every day in our lives.
Agreed. It's an honor to get to represent a community.
Yeah. Well, it's been my honor to have you on today and count you as a friend, and just to watch from afar the incredible success you're having. And Albuquerque is so lucky to have you.
Thank you so much, Ron. And thank you to you and your team for always giving us platforms to have these very important discussions and to keep us motivated and excited and in the work. I appreciate it.
We love economic developers, and we're economic developers for economic developers. So have a great rest of your week and go be successful.
Thank you.
All right. See you later.
Hey, everyone. I'm here today with Steve Jast, who is the president and founder of Research on Investment and Gazelle AI. Hey, Steve, it's great to speak with you today. As one of the leading voices in investment attraction and lead generation, what has stuck out the most for you over the past few months?
Hi, Faye. Thanks so much for the question. First and foremost, let me say that I love the content that Consultant Connect has been generating. I'd also like to take a second to wish all of our listeners continued good health. Every day is really a new adventure. We're seeing some sad stories of industries and companies in steep, unexpected decline, and we're also seeing areas of growth and opportunity. A couple of areas that have generated significant strategic discussions center around supply chain and reshoring. To help economic developers blend these into their strategic plans moving forward, we've been providing complimentary data pulls and access to our Gazelle AI platform.
That's really awesome, Steve. I'm sure this data has helped many economic development organizations. Can you explain how exactly Gazelle AI helps?
Sure. Yeah, great question, Faye. Our platform includes supply chain data for over 900 industries with related company listings. We also have complete company hierarchies, meaning users can build lists of companies that have an HQ in a specific state or country with manufacturing activities in other specific countries. This is ideal for economic recovery planning, reshoring business attraction strategies, understanding local supply chains, and overall investment attraction.
Wow, thanks, Steve. Hey, everyone, if you would like to activate your complimentary access to Gazelle AI, connect with Steve by emailing him at Steve, STEVE, at gazelle.ai. That's Steve at gazelle.ai. Thanks for joining us for today's episode. Tune in again next week for more insight and relevant content to the issues impacting economic development today. America's Jobs Team podcast is sponsored by Research on Investment and Gazelle AI.